Hello, listener. Welcome to Funny They Don't Look Jewish, where Judaism appears in the panels. Our purpose is to find characters, stories, and issues of comics that explore explicitly Jewish content. I'm one of your hosts, Brandon Bernstein.
I'm Henry Bernstein.
No relation. Hey, Henry. So good to see you once again in the virtual Zoom room.
It's really nice to be here. This is a hard time, but I'm glad we're able to do this face to face.
Yeah, as it were, at least being able to virtually see each other face to face. It's like a rough time, right? I'm sure for many people listening, I only see some friends, and usually they're wearing a mask when I see them on walks. And so it's a strange world, but it is lovely to be able to see your Shana Putnam on the camera.
I went to the comic book store today and I said to the guys there, so great seeing the top half of your face.
It's a lovely version. Being able to, at least you get to see the eyes, right?
Yeah.
It's nice to be able to see people's eyes and do that. I don't know, like, maybe it's because I'm single. I definitely find that every time that I do go out, like to the grocery store, or I'm going out, because I'm so unused to seeing people now, I just look and I'm like, everyone is so attractive. Were you this attractive 3 months ago? Because you all look very attractive. I'm just like, so
everyone
thirsty.
Looks great.
Everyone looks amazing. Quarantine, doing well on you.
Yeah.
We are back to continue and to conclude our conversation of the Israeli superheroine Sabra. Last episode, we were introduced to Ruth Bat-Seraph, learned all about this super secret Mossad agent who protects Israel and the Jewish people through her super heroics. Sabra has the equipment that allows her to fly and shoot out energy quills from her cape. She's also super strong and, as we'll find out in the comics and people keep pointing out, super beautiful. We're going to go ahead and get started really quick, usually we try to go in chronological order. This time we're going to jump back to a very early Sabra appearance because I want to point out a trend that happens. So Henry, we're going to start out by looking at a special 3-issue miniseries. We're only looking at one particular issue and actually just a few panels. We're looking at Marvel Superhero Contest of Champions, number 2, July 1982. Now, the Contest of Champions was a famous Marvel crossover that I believe was actually one of the earliest crossovers that even predated Secret Wars. And we talked about it a tiny bit last time. The whole idea was get a whole bunch of superheroes from different countries all together and throw them together in battle for mysterious purposes. We're looking at issue number 2, Frenzy in the Frozen North, written by Mark Gruenwald, Bill Mantlo, and Stephen Grant, penciled by John Romita Jr., good old JRJR, inked by Pablo Marcos, colored by Michelle Wolfman and Christy Scheel, lettered by Joe Rosen, and edited by Mark Gruenwald and Tom DeFalco. Basically, the series takes a bunch of superheroes, splits them into teams, splits those teams into sub-teams, and sends them in contests racing to capture a mysterious prize. So we get a team on page 14 to 15 of issue number 2, a team consisting of Iron Man, Sabra, and a guy named the Arabian Knight. So Sabra introduces herself, letting us know that she's from Israel, and similar to what she says in the Hulk issues we looked at last time, that like the spiny pear that is the symbol of the Israeli people from which I derive my name. I am harsh to my enemies, yet sweet to my friends. Arabian Knight then essentially refuses to fight alongside, quote, a Jewess. Oh, yeah. At which point we get a really interesting rebuttal from Iron Man, sort of being like, so is your problem the fact that she's Jewish or the fact that she's a woman? Because we don't really have time to both fight sexism and the Arab-Israeli conflict and this thing we need to do.
This is great writing here, by the way, that Tony was the one that's like, I definitely hear Robert Downey Jr. saying that.
Totally. And like, I never thought of Iron Man quite as snarky as Robert Downey Jr., but you're right. Going back, it's like,
certainly not that back then.
Yeah. But it's like great to read 80s Iron Man in that light. So they go off competing. We're going to skip forward a few pages. One thing I just thought was interesting, Henry, is that their opponents include She-Hulk, and Sabra squares off with She-Hulk.
Why? Why is she always with the Hulk?
Yeah, exactly. Like, Sabra and Hulks are constantly at each other's throats for whatever reason. I guess it's to show how strong she is, right? If you can go toe-to-toe with the Hulk, and even if you don't win, if you could last a while, like, that's good on you.
And by the way, I'm really digging this design of She-Hulk, too. Just as an aside, you know, I'm used to that period of time of the Jennifer Walters She-Hulk being kind of more put together, and now they've made her kind of more savage again currently. I like this version of her. It's cool.
Yeah, her clothes are very just sort of like rips. It looks a lot more like a female version of what the Hulk wears, which is right. clothing that is not fashionable, but ripped apart. In the battle, Sabra ends up getting knocked out of the ground by a devastating punch, and she's falling. And Arabian Knight actually sends his flying carpet, because in the 80s, there was unfortunately really problematic stereotypes. All of these international characters are stereotypes in troubling ways. We're not going to spend too much time in there. But Arabian Knight saves her and basically says, like, "I trust you've landed safely, Israeli." At which point Sabra responds, "You mean you ordered your carpet to save me?" And Arabian Knight's response is a very tempered, "We are teammates, aren't we?" At which point Sabra goes, "I would rather be dead than allied with you." And that's really the end. I mean, it doesn't really matter what happens to the fight. But what I wanted us to look at is the fact that right from the beginning, prickly indeed, Sabra is not there to make friends. She argues with Arabian Knight constantly. And we saw in the Hulk issues, she got into battles with the Hulk needlessly. We're used to the trope of superheroes fighting each other because they can't communicate. Sabra kind of leans into it way more than any character I've seen. And I was just wondering, Henry, what does it mean that we have Jewish representation and that the Jewish character here is so aggressive and I'm just going to say pretty unlikable.
Yeah, I was going to say unlikable too. Yeah, I mean, I have struggled these last two episodes to connect to Sabra. I think partially because everyone else we've done has become my new favorite superhero.
Yeah.
This is her second appearance. She's not making it easy. So I don't know what that means for how Bill Mantlow conceived her or what he thinks about, if this is something he thinks about Jewish women or Israeli women, or maybe I'm reading too much into it. But it seems like there's nothing inherently likable about her, other than for our purposes that she's Jewish.
Yeah, I think my frustration is that it feels like people, and by people, I mean the creators, they're just focused on one half of what a Sabra is, right? The idea is it's a prickly fruit that is sharp on the outside, but sweet on the inside. I don't think we ever get to see the sweet inside of Sabra. And that's really the problem. Yeah. Like they really emphasize that sharp and prickly outside. And I'm not going to lie, no offense to any Israelis listening, but like I've had those moments with Israelis where I'm just like, what the hell? And they can be very prickly and very aggressive and very sort of angry. And then I've also had those moments where I'm hanging out with some Israelis and I'm like, you just said the softest, sweetest thing. And you're so sweet and you're so hospitable. And I can't believe you're sharing that much with me. And oh my God, what a big softy you are. I'd constantly sort of have moments where I'm like, ugh, Israelis. And then I'll turn around and I'll think about something else. And I'm just like, oh, Israelis, you're so like I don't like as someone Jewish, I have that connection and I see both sides. Yeah. And I just think
they're missing it.
And it'll be interesting today. I think today is going to be the first time we're actually going to see a Jewish author tackle Sabra.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see, does he do any better at bringing the sweet side? But
and they also could just say Sabra means a person born in Israel. They didn't come up with a super creative name. That's okay. I
mean, yeah.
She doesn't have to be prickly as a pear all the time.
Right. She is indeed a person or a character, and most characters should have depth to them. Actually, even as early as like the 2000s, there are series that Sabra's in where she is also paired with someone sort of like Arabian Knight. I forget if it is Arabian Knight or another character, where same deal, they're constantly just bickering at each other and they can't get along because of the conflict. And I guess writers just want to use it to make political commentary rather than create fleshed out characters who might have nuanced opinions and be able to see beyond political allegiances. However, in our next two issues, we are going to get a bit too much to Jewish content. And I actually wonder if it's because of the other character that we wind up being introduced to. Henry, why don't you tell us what issue we're going to look at and the creative team and all that jazz?
We're going to be looking at The New Warriors, Volume 1, Number 58, April 1995. Cover artists Patrick Zurcher and Bruce Patterson. Writer Evan Skolnick. Penciler Patrick Zurcher. Inker Bruce Patterson, Andrew Papoy. Colorist Joe Rosas. Letterer John Costanza. And editor Tom Brevoort, who is, I think, edited every single Marvel issue we've done.
Something like that. Like him or DeFalco or...
Yeah. Yeah. And Patrick Zurcher, I am familiar with because he did Action Comics Rebirth a couple years ago. Great job. And Evan Skolnick, our dear listeners have heard of him before.
Yeah.
We had him in episode 6, I believe, where he wrote that issue of Kitty Pryde, where she's in that Marvel Holiday Special watching in 1996, walking along with that a girl in a ruined, burned down church.
Right. Yeah, so we've seen Evan Skolnick before. We know that he has Jewish content. Let's just say really quick, the New Warriors is basically a group of teenage superheroes in the Marvel Universe. They're not quite the Teen Titans because they're not sort of like teen versions of established superheroes, but they're the non-mutant teenage team of the 90s.
Okay.
This is characters like a guy named Speedball. The other two main ones we're going to see are Firestar, who got her start in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, mm-hmm. TV show. And then Justice, who is another character that we're going to see and actually is Jewish, as we're going to find out in this issue. There's other new warriors like Nova and Turbo and eventually the Scarlet Spider and a bunch of others.
Were there warriors before the New Warriors?
I don't think so. I don't think there's always been the New Warriors. There's okay. The champions, the defenders, et cetera. But, you know, they're always the New Warriors. Maybe they're basing themselves off the 80s movie, right? New Warriors come out and play. So let's jump right into the cover of this issue. On this cover, it's pretty striking. You have Justice and Firestar of the New Warriors are standing on two flags, the Israeli flag on the left and the Syrian flag on the right. And above them is Sabra, who her costume very much resembles the Israeli flag. And she's fighting a character we're going to find out is named Batal, who is wearing the Syrian flag, essentially as the costume. And the two are engaged in battle while the New Warriors seem to be looking on. I just think it's pretty striking. Once again, it's not really like Jewish, but there's hot political content going on because in 1995 and throughout the 90s, and we're going to get into this a bit more, but there was lots of talk of peace talks between Israel and her neighbors, between Israel and Lebanon and Syria and Jordan, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got these flags. It's a pretty striking cover. You can already guess what this issue is going to be about. And Henry, I think you wanted to say a thing or two about the art in general.
I was actually surprised when I saw it was Patrick Zercher because just I picture him in the way he draws in a very different way. This is so 90s. This is like Rob Liefeld plus Jim Lee plus like on crack. Like it's just big guns, big muscles, long legs that are longer than the entire length of a human body. I just don't remember loving that as a kid. Maybe I did in 1995, but because this just, it was hard to get through it because I saw all the imagery. It was like overwhelming. I couldn't read the words. And a few times when we were going over this, Brandon, you were like, oh, that's so funny that like you notice the art, you missed that panel or something like that. Look how sharp her cape is. I feel like it's like stabbing my eyes. You know?
Yeah, usually.
It's not poorly done. It's incredible art, but it's just that style is too much for me.
In past appearances, it looked like she had a coat that looked more like a peacock feather. And in this case, it looks more like she's a porcupine.
Yeah.
Right. So I hear you on the sharpness. Yeah, it's very much 90s excess and extremism. And the only sort of plus that I will give to Mr. Zercher is that he can draw feet better than Rob Liefeld.
That's true. That is definitely true.
So let's jump inside. Let's look at the content. So page one, we have a processional of cars making their way to the UN building. And inside one of these cars is none other than Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, along with Sabra. This is not some other random diplomat named Rabin. This is indeed the Prime Minister of Israel in April of 1995, heading to the UN on his way to a peace conference. Henry, would you go ahead and just read, none of the dialogue, but would you read the captions for us? Because I think it's like, it's beautiful narration opening up this issue.
Shalom. In Hebrew, it's one word with three meanings. Hello, goodbye, peace. Today, as Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin's motorcade bullies its way through the afternoon Manhattan traffic on its way to the United Nations complex, it's the third meaning of shalom, which is foremost in the statesman's thoughts. Yes, shalom should mean peace today, but it seems there are always those who would rather it meant goodbye.
And of course, they get attacked by terrorists. I just loved it. I mean, it's kind of like a basic intro, but like, this is a great way to write about a Jewish or Hebrew word and explain it. I think like it's a fascinating concept for non-Jewish readers to know that there's one word that can mean these three things. And it's like playful writing to be able to say shalom should be peace. This is a peace deal. But it can also mean goodbye as in like out of here. I don't know.
Solid writing. It was like, you know, if you're a teenager, you understand it. If you're an adult reading comics, it's very accessible. It's good writing.
It's very accessible. And it actually reminds me, like, I forget where it is. I think somewhere in Samuel or Kings, there's like a point also where like, even in the Hebrew Bible, they use shalom as peace to really mean kind of like go screw yourself. It's just like, what do you mean? Like you know, malacha shalom. Like, what are you talking about? All this peace stuff. I just love that he's playing into it. So that's funny. We're going to skip over most of the fight because we're really interested in the Jewish content. But on page 6, one of the terrorists has leapt onto the roof and is ripping it off when all of a sudden he's shocked by a punch to the face or a blast and is like confused by something he sees. And Sabra is the one punching him and yelling, "It's called the Star of David, assassin. And those who wear it have been known to bring down much bigger Goliaths than you." So number one, that's our third time having Star of David just randomly mentioned, because that's what we talk about all the time with Sabra. And two, great biblical reference to Shmuel Aleph, to 1 Samuel chapter 17, David slaying Goliath. And I love the idea that Sabra is just, we can take down bigger Goliaths than you. Henry, I actually wanted to bring up, I think part of what I love about this is we've talked, Sabra does not strike us as particularly religious, right?
Yeah, we talked about that last time. I asked, do you think she's religious? And you speculated that, no, she's for sure a Philistine.
Right. She's probably secular. So this actually brought me back to rabbinical school, my first year when I was in Jerusalem, and we were talking with this American guy who had made Aliyah and was talking about the experience and what it meant for him to be living in Israel. And he told us the story that, if it's okay, I want to share with you. That was just fascinating, because his point was trying to show that there's something about growing up in Israel where, even if you're not religious, you have certain cultural touch points that are inherently Jewish in a way that Americans, who may even be very deeply religiously Jewish, don't have. And this was the example. He was hanging out with his Israeli friend, and they're in the kitchen, and there's like an ant problem, and they're looking for it, and they like open the cabinets under the sink, and there's just a flourishing of ants that goes rushing out from there. And the guy telling the story, the guy from America originally, goes, "Whoa, a stampede," because his reference is cowboy movies and sort of when like all the animals go running. She's like, "Whoa, it's a stampede of ants." His Israeli friend goes, "Wow, it's a Yitzhiat Mitzrayim. Wow, it's the Exodus from Egypt," because that was his touch point. Again, that point that even though Sabra's not religious, she still probably went to school in Israel. She was educated in Tanakh. It was just a part of things, not in a religious way, but she grew up where a lot of the stuff that we view as quote unquote religious was just part of the culture, was part of the calendar, was part of the history. And so I like the fact that her references, we could be reading it as cheesy, but I actually think it's just like, these are the cultural references she has. She is as familiar with David and Goliath as the average American kid would be with Paul Bunyan. Page 9, the battle finished. The new warriors showed up to help. By the way, the battle being finished, Justice basically is the Jewish character, is saying there was nothing mentioned about some Israeli superhero being here. What was her name? And we see his girlfriend, Firestar, we'll pick up on this later, showing a bit of jealousy, being like, who cares? Right? Mm-hmm. What do we care what her name is? So we've got a bit of jealousy, as I said. And then, Henry, you want to read what Speedball, the third teammate, responds after finding out that her name's Sabra?
Oy, if that's what super agents look like in Israel, where do I sign up to convert?
So yeah, Speedball was the like, he was like the quote unquote funny character that was meant to be making the snarky jokes in that 90s way. But you know, we're going to continue to follow this path of what it means that all the boys love Sabra. There's a lot of, we're going to see developing a lot of play of this idea of Jewish-Jewish relationships and interfaith relationships, because you've got Justice, who's asking about this Jewish heroine, Firestar, his non-Jewish girlfriend, having some discomfort with there being a very attractive Jewish Israeli woman around, and Speedball, who's not Jewish, being like, dang, I'd convert if it meant I could get with her. It's maybe a little gross, but we'll keep our eyes on it. Another thing to keep our eyes on this page, there's a flashback letting us know that one of the characters, we don't know who, has been implanted with some subliminal programming. Dun, dun, dun. Skipping forward to page 12, that Syrian flag-dressed character from the cover, Batal, has guns inside the UN. Justice, trying to be a good American superhero there to keep the peace, grabs the gun from him, holds it up, and asks the guy, "Who are you?" And then we get this conversation between Sabra and Firestar.
"He's called Batal, the Syrian super agent. Go ahead, shoot him. Shoot him dead."
"Jeez, how can you say that so easily, so casually?"
"As easily as they killed my son."
Whew. So, you know, Sabra is not pulling any punches. She's clearly very angry at Batal. But Henry, you were pointing this out when we were planning this episode. This is probably the first time that we've ever learned anything that could be like the root of Sabra's anger and why she's upset all the time.
This was clear. This was some sort of retcon. I mean, we discussed this. She would have, had she had a son that already died in her first appearance with the Hulk, she would have mentioned it when a little boy died and she seemed affected by it after Hulk, you know,
right. Jewish kids after her. Last episode, there was this emphasis that Sabra was crying over the loss of a little boy, you know, the same boy that Hulk had befriended. And like you said, Henry, like, clearly if her son had been killed at that time, you would think that she would be reflecting like, "Oh, this reminds me of me losing my own son." I do wonder, since it is a retcon, Henry, is it possible that we didn't see it? It was always off panel, but like that her son died after that Hulk issue, but before this one?
Yeah, and anything's possible, and maybe we did miss it. I don't think we've read every appearance of her. You may have read more, but by the way, it is a good reason to have her be the way she is. And had that been the reason all along, maybe I would be a little more empathetic to her character, which is a difficult one.
Right. It very much feels like Evan Skolnick is doing his best to both keep Sabra as prickly and also try to write in some defense for why she behaves this way. He is trying to sort of make her more human and more approachable, I think.
Yeah.
So page 15, basically the characters are getting ready to each defend their respective countries, and Batal and Sabra keep sniping at each other. This is very reminiscent of Sabra and Arabian Nights sniping at each other. So like I said, it's just a recurring thing we see with Sabra. They constantly put her with a different character from a different Arab majority country and have them fight each other. Kind of becomes a tiring trope when you read it for the third or fourth time. But at this point...
Well, when she only makes an appearance every 10 years, I guess you kind of forget about it.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. It reminds me a bit of Ragman, how like every time Ragman appears, it's like, let's tell the story again. And I'm like, I read this story though. I'm like, don't you understand? One day, two boys will be doing a podcast and researching all these stories at once. They demand variety. So the American agent, who's sort of in charge of everything, makes a comment that they're each representing their countries, and Sabra interrupts and says, "My country? No, Agent Pachuk. It is my people I represent, a people who have been persecuted throughout the ages. The pharaohs, the Romans, the Germans, they all punished us Jews." On the one hand, this is pretty similar to, you remember last time with the Peter David issues where there was like, it's the Zionist recruiting board that's fighting me, and like Sabra would go on these rants. Actually, I think I liked this rant more than anyone she's given before. There's something about it that, I don't know if it's like her identity and saying like, I represent my people rather than the country. Like that resonates strongly with me. Like she's about the Jews and the Jewish people, not about...
That feels familiar.
So as she's going on and on about this, Justice uses this opportunity to sort of have a little reverie and a flashback to... And now he's back, an 11-year-old boy in his Sunday school. And we basically have an entire page of Justice as a young boy in Sunday school learning about Judaism. And I think, Henry, where we really have to start is the top right panel here on page 16 is a blackboard that has many notes of what they've apparently been discussing. At the top, we have the words of the Shema written in English translation and in Hebrew in English transliteration. So it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad." To the left, there's apparently a list of denominations. It says Orthodox, - Hasidic, Below that, reform, conservative, reconstructionist. And then to the right, it says Stephen Wise and lists a bunch of things that appear to be creations of Stephen S. Wise and his various accomplishments and contributions to American Judaism. First, it says Federation. And initially, I know you would think like, oh, it means like the Federation system. But actually, I think it's the Federation of Zionist Societies, which he did help found in 1897. As far as I'm aware, Stephen S. Wise did not help form the Federation system. So Federation of Zionist Societies. Below that, it says American J, which I believe must stand for American Jewish Congress, which was started in 1920. It was an advocacy group. Stephen Wise was involved. Then it says Zionist Org. I'm imagining that has to be the Zionist Organization of America, ZOA, which went on to go into very different directions. And then, of course, it says Jewish Inst, as in Jewish Institute of Religion, because Stephen S. Wise actually started the Jewish Institute of Religion, which was a reformed seminary that eventually merged with the Hebrew Union College made by Isaac Mayer Wise, thus creating HUCJIR, the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, aka the place where I went to rabbinical school.
That was great. By the way, I have both a cynical and sympathetic view of this panel. Number one, the cynical one is, I taught Hebrew school for 10 years. If I covered the major branches of Judaism, it definitely wasn't in the same lesson that I was teaching the Shema. But, or one sympathetic thing is you could say, like, here, there are these different versions of Judaism, but they all adhere to Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. How's that?
That's lovely. That's a really lovely
way. That would be a nice lesson.
Right, because I was left asking myself probably the same question, which is like, what in the world, what lesson would possibly be teaching these three different things? Right. Why would they be on here? And like, we're going to see in the next issue, it's pretty clear that Justice belonged to a Reform synagogue. So I guess that's why they're learning Stephen Wise. They're right. Probably just hardcore Reform. But also like, good for this board for including Reconstructionist Judaism. I thought it was just so Orthodox, Reform, Conservative. Like, I was excited to see that. All right. So as we go on, Justice and his teacher basically get into a discussion where they're talking about persecution, and Vance, Justice's real name, basically asks if Jews ever, quote unquote, won against all the jerks that persecuted them. And the teacher lets him know that, of course, the Jews won. After all, we still exist. By outlasting our persecutors, we've won. And by being good people, we've won. And Vance is like, no, I don't mean that way. I mean, have we ever fought back? And the teacher's answer is more or less, just be a good person. Mm-hmm. At which point, Henry, would you read at the bottom of the page the narration that Justice thinks to himself?
Didn't like that answer. In fact, that might have been the turning point for me and religion, because the idea of a God who would watch his chosen people suffer and not want them to defend themselves just didn't make sense to me. The makings of a future superhero right there.
Right. The makings of a future superhero. And also, here's what I loved about it. The Israeli mentality, right? Like, I don't remember if we've talked about this before. I think we did. As Jews were making Aliyah into Israel in the late 1880s and 1890s and the early 1900s, there was this concept that was created of the new Jew. And the whole idea was the old Jew is the image of this nebbishy, nerdy Jewish man studying in a Beis Midrash and being too meek to ever raise up a hand to defend his wife when Cossacks raped and pillaged the village.
We talked about that in our first episode, I believe.
Yeah, we did, and in Moon Knight and things like that. And the Israeli mentality, right, was like this strong, tough new Jew who was like bronze tan skin and has muscles and does all this stuff. And so it's interesting that Justice basically is in that Israeli mentality, pushing against the religious sort of, oh, just be a good person idea. And so maybe it's also like, no wonder he has this attraction to Sabra, who very much represents that mentality and approach.
Yeah.
And also, Henry, this is where I realized maybe I shouldn't actually like superheroes. Like, I don't believe in like taking force and fight. Like, I don't want us to just sit back and be needlessly slaughtered either. But I very much do believe, like what the teacher said, I was like, yeah, just be a good person.
Like, you're not what? All like that. Superman's not like that.
That's true. Thank God for Superman.
Yeah.
Page 17, Sabra reveals that her son was 6 years old and actually that he resembled Vance Justice, that Vance looks a lot like her son.
How old is she?
Sheila Tova, it's a good question.
Like, is she old enough to be his mom, or is she old enough to be his girlfriend? Which is he like hot for teacher, you know?
Yeah, I would guess, knowing the way Marvel ages work, if he's a teenage superhero, so let's call him 18, maybe. I don't actually know the age, right? Like, but let's call him 18. I'd say Sabra's probably like 28, right? Like, if she's 28, she could have had a kid at 22, or, you know, at 20. I don't know. I feel a little uncomfortable guessing on
this. Let's not go there. Random.
So Sabra's telling the story, and she says, the Arabs killed him on his school bus. A bomb. At which point Batal interrupts, the Arabs? It was the PLO who killed your son, witch, not the Arabs. We're sick of your generalizations. Sabra responds, and we're sick of your terrorism, every day living in fear. And we have the bickering that continues and the fighting. And just want to point out, even though this is more political than Jewish content, the PLO, of course, is the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which was led at the time, 1995, by Yasser Arafat, who was deeply involved in peace negotiations with Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and the Oslo Accords. And we'll get into that a little bit later. Page 18, they mentioned the fact that the Syrian president is al-Assad. Just fun fact, that would be Hafez al-Assad, the father of Bashar al-Assad, the current president. Hafez served as president from 1971 to 2000. And also should mention, as I said, throughout the 1990s, there were various peace talks between Israel and Hafez al-Assad, including, of note, the Madrid Conference of 1991, which was an attempt at a peace talk between Israel, the PLO, Lebanon, Syria, etc. So all throughout the 90s, as I mentioned earlier, there is this sort of hopeful sense of peace talks and what might happen. And therefore, of course, we have this peace talk represented in the comic. And this is followed by, I think, two of the saddest lines that we get throughout the entire series on page 18.
Well, Sabra, there's a Palestinian over there. Aren't you going to push him out of his seat and claim it as your own?
I don't respond to child killers.
Whew. That's adult stuff.
It's super adult stuff.
That felt very, you know, it feels very real and very current and sad. Like you said, sad. I mean, just, you know,
yeah,
the same old conversation we're seeing over and over again, you know.
Right, right. And but each of them blindly assuming the other represents all their worst fears of a country they view as an enemy, right? That Batal views Sabra as behaving like all of Israel and therefore thinking, you know, oh, you can take anything that would be a Palestinians. And Sabra saying, one, you know, a group of terrorists killed my child and therefore you're all child killers. Like, they're both making blatant exaggerations. And like I said, it's very adult and accurate, and also just like painful to sort of read this. And all the more weird when on the next page, as they're walking into the room, the captions explain that they're walking side by side could resemble another ritual, and specifically a wedding, and sort of muses on this idea that in another lifetime, Sabra and Batal could have been walking, again, getting married, which is so weird. And we get this line, but in this world, we are taught who we should hate by those we love. Pretty powerful statement. Twist of the issue, the ending is that Sabra is the one who is brainwashed, and suddenly she goes crazy and tries to kill Batal and ruin the peace conference. And we get a big fat to be continued.
We're going to jump right in to New Warriors number 59, which has the same credits.
This issue came out May 1995 and goes by the title Radicals.
I want to start with actually page 2 and not page 1. Page 2, the top panel, we have this dichotomy, or sort of two sides of something, side-by-side images of a man going to synagogue and praying and then coming home and abusing his wife and child. And I just want to read it. It says, always wondered how my dad could mouth the words to our Friday night prayers liberally laced with the Hebrew words for peace and love, and then go home and beat me and mom. Didn't make sense then. Let me go to the next panel. Doesn't make sense now. I look at Sabra, a beautiful woman from a country where the word for hello is also the word for peace. And then I see her suddenly possessed with murderous bloodlust. Like I said, doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I just want to point out, Henry, we've talked about this before, but in that first panel of this page where we see the man at shul, you see an arc and you see a giant Star of David on the Ark, and then you sort of see some lovely curtains on either side, and you see this set table that has a covered challah, or what we can assume to be a challah covered, and two Shabbat candles. So it's like set up for Shabbat. And then you see a group of people, men and women, all the men are in kippot, they're all together, so we know it's not an Orthodox synagogue. Again, this is part of why I think it's a Reform synagogue that Vance grew up at. But every single one of these people is standing, facing away from the Ark, and clasping their hands with their heads lowered in Christian prayer. It's, we've talked about it before, but it's so annoying to like the words, right? Yes, Friday night prayers would be full with prayers like Shalom Rav, that are praying for peace, and prayers like Ahavat Olam and Ve'ahavta that are like rooted in love. So like he gets that concept right. And the fact that the representation shows the most Christian looking prayer, it just, it makes my blood boil every time, Henry.
Yeah. I when I just glanced at it, I gave them both that I was like, oh, maybe they're on their way out to Kiddush, but, but I don't think so.
No, they are. They're like, it's very clear that every one of them has their head tilted downward with their eyes closed. It is. I do not think Patrick Zurcher is Jewish. No. I think he's drawing a very Christian version of prayer.
Right. Going back to page one, you see a flashback of Vance's father hovering over Vance and his mom and excoriating them and ready to beat them. And then we go to page three and you have the same position, but now Sabra is where the father was and Firestar is where Vance's mother is, and Vance is still where he was before. And I just thought that was an amazing visual cue. How does that look? I've only seen this digitally, Brandon. How does that look?
I'll tell you this, Henry. I didn't pick up on this. And I think in part that's because you don't see the pages near each other enough. But once you pointed it out, I couldn't stop looking back and forth. It's like this great parallel of Justice remembering that he's had this experience before of somebody who professes these great values and seems to be way too aggressive physically. The other thing that's really weird, and I don't know if you're going to go here, is as we talked about just now, is Sabra like into Justice, and are they flirting? Is she old enough to be his mom? She's positioned to be in a parental role. So like, and also Justice, she kept saying, looks like her kid. So it's really weird that it's like, there's this, I guess, Oedipal attraction. Yeah. Between the two. It's like, it's very strange, the layers that Evan is studying, because it's like, it would make sense to either just have her be very maternal and saying like, oh, you remind me of my son, or to have the like awkward sexual tension. It's, I don't like that it has both.
It's weird. They kind of are trying to play with both things. It's the, yeah. They haven't figured it quite out yet. So we're going to go to page six, and on the bottom of page six, they're all fighting. And Justice says, something's obviously controlling her actions, Angel, talking to Firestar. Maybe even someone like Protocol. Sabra would never willingly try to kill her own prime minister. And Firestar says, yeah, unless she's one of those radical Israelis who's actually opposed to peace talks. Knowing what we know is going to happen, that was really tough to read.
It was really tough to read. I think we need to talk about it. So this issue comes out in May 1995. On November 4th, 1995, which corresponds to the 12th of Mar Cheshvan, 5756, in Kings of Israel Square in Tel Aviv, Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin was gunned down and assassinated. It was following a rally supporting the Oslo Accords. It was exactly what is described, that a radical opposed to the peace process took it into their own hands to assassinate the Israeli prime minister. He was assassinated by Yigal Amir, Yimach Shemo, who was an Israeli law student and an ultra-nationalist radical, claiming he was operating under God's orders. You know, I still think when, like, almost every time that I've gone to Israel, whether on a trip or living there, like, at some point I go to Kings of Israel Square in Tel Aviv, and I look at like the sort of the landmarks that are left there and the memorials that are built there, and it gets me every time, right? It's just like so devastating and tragic that I don't know if there was ever a time that we were closer than in like the mid 90s to seeing peace deals with Israel's neighbors. And the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin remains, I think, one of the great tragedies of Israeli history. And it's really crazy, like, fine. The idea that a political leader would be assassinated, I'm not surprised to see fiction about that. But again, the fact that 6 months, right? This issue came out 6 months before it actually happened. It's just like wild.
Prophetic. It's weird. Yeah.
Right. It's oddly prophetic. And like you said, like, I imagine this comic came out and probably meant one thing. And anyone who was like paying attention and also reading New Warriors probably made this a really difficult reread.
Yes.
Pretty quickly.
Yes.
Right. Like, it'd be kind of interesting to see what the history of this issue is. I don't know what the overlap is of Middle East political aficionados and right. comic book readers, or New Warriors readers specifically.
Right.
It's almost on the level of like when I read a comic book that makes references to the Twin Towers and how great they are. And every time it just sort of like throws me off because I'm like, oh, it's, you know, those aren't there. It's such a cognitive dissonance. So to read this story and to see this happening, it's like a, I don't know, maybe it just has me wishing, like, I wish Sabra was there in the rally. I wish there really was a Sabra to have like taken the bullet with her bulletproof skin and saved him.
I mean, it really dates this issue. You just wouldn't see this again. If this had come out 6 months later, that would not be in there.
Right.
Now, maybe years later, as a retrospective comment, social commentary, maybe you would see it. But this is definitely, I mean, it's eerie.
Right, right. That's an interesting point, that it like it just eked out. Like, literally, if he had the idea for the same storyline, but for some reason had six other issues in mind first, you wouldn't be able to do it.
All right. So on page 8, there's this really cringeworthy dialogue that I wanted to go through at the top. Firestar fires her power at Sabra and takes her down. And Justice says, "My God, Angel, I said stun her, not kill her." And then what does Firestar say, Brandon?
"Will you stop mooning over that slut? Maybe you should." Yeah, right? Like, no. Well, like, this is the 90s extremism to the worst, right? Like, oh, you didn't want me to kill that person? Is it because you want to sleep with that slut? Like, whoa, this is so troubling.
Slut shaming's not cool.
The language isn't cool. The level of jealousy is like way too extreme. This is like, I understand superheroics are about the drama, but this is like drama to an insane degree.
I don't want to emulate, if she's a superhero, I'm not. That's not the same Firestar that was on Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends.
No, it was not. But Firestar continues saying, "Maybe you should have just charmed her into submission with those lovely eyes of yours, Vance. Then you could have finally settled down with a nice Jewish girl."
What did you think about that line?
I mean, I think it reflects like a deep insecurity in Firestar, right? There's clearly something where Firestar, I don't know, it reminds me, like, did they have some sort of conversation? Like, I don't get the impression that Justice has a good relationship with his father, but is there something that Firestar is thinking, like, we're dating, but he would never marry me because I'm not Jewish? Like, I don't see why she'd bring this up unless it's an insecurity of hers. And why don't you go ahead and read Justice's response before we talk about this?
Which kind of answers that. He says, "Angel, you know that was never an issue for me. I don't even consider myself a practicing," and he gets cut off by an attack from Sabra, who's obviously going to say a practicing Jew. So, you know, did he take her home for a holiday and mom was cold and or whatever, or said, "You're dead to me"? Or, yeah, is it an issue about a marriage thing? I mean, there's so many ways we could go with this. So it's interesting that they put it in there. I mean, this is a conversation that has not gone away or changed for many people. So, I mean, I actually think that's more courageous as an issue than some of the other stuff they deal with. And I wish that might have been fleshed out more in a more appropriate way instead of calling her that word.
Yeah, like I almost wish that we didn't have the superheroics of it, of Sabra being brainwashed, because Evan Skolnick here keeps bringing up, you know, just reviewing, we have Speedball offering, joking, but also kind of serious, offering to convert if that means he would get to marry someone like Sabra.
Right.
We have Justice dating Firestar, who's not Jewish, and so we have an interfaith relationship that he seems contented in, but the partner who's not Jewish feels jealous and concerned when all of a sudden an attractive Jewish woman shows up. We also had the weird talk of Batal and Sabra looking as though they're walking down an aisle. So there's another relationship where you would have a both religious and politically diverse relationship in marriage. So clearly Evan's curious about exploring these topics, and I wish that we could have seen it done in a more thoughtful and fleshed out way rather than just a sort of extreme argumentative dialogue tapped on, because it, as you said, it taps onto a real issue that I think as a society, there's both better resources and a lot of acceptance and embrace of interfaith relationships. And there's also still a lot of elements of the Jewish world that frown on it. Like, I remember growing up all the time, my mom would tell me, "Brandon, I don't care who you marry, as long as they're Jewish. Guy, girl, doesn't matter, as long as they're Jewish." Which is like, right, like basically my mom, and like, you know, I remember hearing this in like the early 90s, which was not quite as tolerant of LGBTQ population, right? And so my mom was basically saying like, "I don't care what your sexuality is, that doesn't matter, but like, they better be Jewish. Like, even if you're gay." You know, it's not written with enough sensitivity, but I do like that it taps into an issue that I think is an issue. Like, I've got lots of friends that I talk to, and I have those who, you know, because of that, only ever dated people who are Jewish. And I work with students who are dating people who aren't Jewish for the first time and talk to me about like, how do I tell my parents about this? And my parents are furious about me, or I don't want my parents to know because of this. And like, you know, it's a very real concern, except, you know, Justice's statement is like, "I don't care about this."
Yeah. So then a lot of punchy, punchy, fight.
Yep.
And then we move on page 18. Sabra's just taking it to Justice. He's not going to win this fight. And she's going to take him down. And so he's like trying to think of something to say to her to break through the mind control. So he says in the last panel on page 18, "What can I say to make her remember? What was that prayer? Can't remember. Got to try."
And so on the next page, cut between panels that close in on Justice's mouth as he's bleeding and being choked alive, and then Sabra's eyes glowing with the mind control and slowly losing it. Justice says, "Yitgadal v'yitkadash shemei rabah. Be'ama divra chirute v'yamlich mochute b'chayechon uv'yomechon uv'chaye dechol beit Yisrael ba'agala uv'izman kariv." And Sabra lets go of his throat.
And with a tear down her eye, says, "V'imru amen."
What?
Yeah, they should have ended the issue right there. Like, I didn't need the wrap-up at the end.
Right.
I mean, great cinema right there in terms of, you know, like visual storytelling, the close-ups,
totally.
Closer and closer, the mouth switching, his mouth, and then her eyes softening with each word, and then the release of her hands and then the tear and the Vimru. I mean, very well done. I mean, bravo, Zurcher and Skolnick.
Right. Really well set up. Beautiful to see. I agree. I think for us, like, we don't need anything more than this page. But I just want to emphasize, because I remember this is what I said when I first found out this issue exists. Justice broke off Sabra's mind control by reciting the mourner's Kaddish.
You don't get much more Jewish than that for explicit Jewish content, right?
Broke through to her with like the prayer. Like, here's the thing, Henry. It's not a surprise to our listeners that my dad died in December 2018, and I spent my year of Avelut, my year of mourning, saying Kaddish for my father every single day that I could. I think I only missed 10 in the 11 months or so during which I would say Kaddish. I remember growing up at a Reform synagogue that taught me the words of Kaddish and taught everybody to say it, because the mentality was we all say Kaddish for those who have no one left to say Kaddish. And my mom's father, my Zeta, who grew up Orthodox and was conservative at the time, came out to visit around my bar mitzvah time and overheard me reciting Kaddish. And he said, "What are you doing? That's only if your parents die. Don't say that." And I remember arguing with him. He's like, "Oh, what? You think because you became a man, now all of a sudden you're 13, you can make all your decisions and you know best? You think you know everything? Like, you're not supposed to say it." And like that, like, really shook me. I think he could have gone about it better. But the important thing is, like, that ended up impacting me. And I remember being in rabbinical school and making the decision that I would not recite Kaddish unless I was leading the service, in which case I feel it's different when you're in a communal role, but I would not be reciting Kaddish. And I remember saying, because God forbid when that day comes, I want it to feel different when I'm saying that prayer. And I remember a classmate of mine was like, "You're not going to want that. It's not going to, you know." But when my dad died, Kaddish became the way that I'm not always OCD, but like my OCD came out in needing to say Kaddish every single day. And that prayer became everything to me. And it is so much more powerful than it ever was before that. So like, I know the power. Anyone who has lost somebody and recited Kaddish, and especially recited Kaddish for almost a full year for somebody, that prayer just hits in a particular way.
Yeah. It's wonderful that this comic was able to do that for us. Cause you know, I would say for most of this, we've been pretty critical of these issues. And so, you know, isn't it amazing that a comic from, you know, 1995, rereading it, you know, and even it's not a great comic and it has a lot of issues, problems with it, that the end can still get you in a very personal way. I mean, I can't relate to it in that way. I'm glad that it did for you, that you can't get much more, like I said, explicitly Jewish than that, and personal for many people.
Definitely, definitely. Let's go ahead and read, you know, it wasn't needed for us, but I think it was needed, especially for those who aren't Jewish, for most audiences. Speedball and Sabra have a brief conversation as Sabra is willingly turning herself in following the brainwashing.
So Sabra's turning herself in. They're loading people into the ambulance. And Speedball says, "So the prayer was called Mourner's what?" And Sabra says, "Kaddish, a very effective choice, Justice. The very prayer I've hoped my son has heard me saying for him all these years. This time, someone said it for me." And Justice says, "It was all I could think of, Sabra."
Yeah. It's, oh, right. That, like, that switching, especially, like, we call it the Mourner's Kaddish, but the Hebrew name for it is Kaddish Yatom, the Orphan's Kaddish. And although it's used for any relative, that any close relative who's died, it's primarily recited by a parent who's, or a child who's lost their parent. Mm-hmm. And it's all the more devastating when it's said by a parent who's lost their child. So like, it's very powerful actually of Sabra to be able to say, like, "I said this prayer for my son and now someone said it for me." Like, it's also sort of a reminder of Sabra was like, the brainwashing was so extreme. It's like, she almost died.
Right.
Who gets the opportunity to hear that prayer said on for their behalf? Like, it's like a weird, only in superhero comics could you get that.
Yeah. What do you make of Sabra overall? We talked a little bit about it at the top, but, you know, how are we going to grade her either on her own or in comparison with our other heroes we've met?
Yeah, it's a little difficult. I mean, I was thinking about this, and even the parts that made me want to say, "Oh, there's some beautiful Jewish content," I was asking myself, like, we're almost taking two characters, because this time it's more Justice, and Justice is Jewish content rather than Sabra's.
Yeah, this episode could be the Marvel Boy Justice Vance episode in many ways. I mean, he is definitely the co-star of it.
100%, 100%.
He's the hero in it.
Yes, he very much is. And I think it's difficult. I think it's a reminder that representation is a good start, but strong characterization is an important second. And I like the idea of Sabra a lot more than I actually like the character. And I'm still waiting for a writer to come by and do her some real, forgive the pun, some real justice, to see her just sort of written well and complexly. And I want a likable Sabra. I want an Israeli superhero and that I can be like, what an awesome character.
Yeah.
But that being said, as you said, you know, the Hulk issues were fine. I think with these New Warriors issues, I really liked the Jewish content. I liked bringing up the conversation about interfaith relationships and Jewish relationships. I really enjoyed the usage of prayer to snap her out of it. And I thought that it was pretty smart and, as we said, like almost prophetic and eerie. I really felt a sense of Yi-Rah in the sense of both awe and fear when reading about the Rabin assassination and realizing how close this issue came out to the actual assassination. I felt like for a while there, we were kind of going like they kept getting better and better and better. Sabra's definitely been a step down in terms of Jewish content, but I'm really glad that we explored her and we saw what else is out there.
Yeah, and a couple of final thoughts about her. I think there were, in every single issue we saw, there were a lot of interesting threads that I would love to pull to see a full story about that. You know, like, oh, that's a kind of a slightly interesting thing about you. She's a Mossad agent. What's her history? What's her story? How did she get there? Who are her parents? Does she have siblings? Certainly this child situation, I would love to see the Clark Kent side of her, you know, her as a person. It seems like because she's not a regular Marvel character in an ongoing series, even on a team, you know, there's a lot of random people who get a lot of screen time in the X-Men and other team things. We don't, every time we see her, it's an appearance, and her appearance has to be an impact, and she's pretty much used as a villain in a way, like she has to fight with someone, and that's not the interesting stuff in there. The Kaddish scene is the interesting stuff. The mentioning of her son is the interesting stuff. The monologue that she gives about caring for her people, not just the government, that's interesting. I want to know more about that. You know, what's her history? Was she in the, you know, what was her history in the IDF? You know, what kind of things did she have to do? You know where I'm going with this? Like, she could make an interesting ongoing or mini series if... We've said this before, like, you know, if we had the right writer tackling one of these people with a real deep, rich Jewish content, maybe this could go somewhere. But we didn't get enough of that. We only got these flashes of her and these brief appearances where they're like, this is her and this is her powers. And this is a thing about her because she's Israeli.
We kind of lean on him a lot as our answer. But do you know who would probably write a killer version of Sabra as a Mossad agent?
Rucka.
Greg Rucka.
Yeah.
Right? He would nail the international politics aspect of it while bringing the Judaism and being able to explore Sabra as a complex and powerful female protagonist.
And even everything about her writer could do that. Right. Like Tom King could write a great Mossad agent story like that because he does his research and he, you know, he's lived it. And he's not Jewish, but there's more to this character.
Yeah.
I don't know if Bill Mantlo intended it when he invented her, but there is definitely more to this character than we've seen so far.
Very much. And I think the biggest chaval is that since 1995, so in the 25 years since, I've mostly seen her pop up, sometimes in X-Men, sometimes in, I think she was in a Captain Britain mini and like various things.
Even Captain Britain got a mini before Sabra.
Right. Side note, I was actually thinking about the fact that like Captain Britain used to have his own series in England and like an English imprint. Like England had its own imprint of Marvel Comics separate from the rest of Marvel Comics. And that's where we first got Captain Britain. And they eventually kind of came over. That's where like Alan Moore and a bunch of others were like writing stuff for Marvel before coming to like US Marvel. And like, if that model still existed and there was, say, an Israeli imprint, like that's where you would get the awesome Sabra story because they would write it themselves and be able to do it in that way. But I guess my point was we see sometimes a gentler Sabra and sometimes like a more likable Sabra, but we never really see the Jewish content. It's reserved to the fact that she has the costume that looks like an Israeli flag, right. And that's about it. We don't really get much more. And so it's just a shame that in 25 years since, you know, there are all those interesting threads as you described, and nobody has pulled on them yet to be able to do something great. So maybe we will. Maybe one of you listening to this one day is going to become a writer and will write the be-all, end-all of Sabra stories in the years to come.
Some Sabra fanfic on Twitter would be cool. Yeah, I'd give her a 3. You know, it just because it ended with Kaddish, but that might be even generous.
Yeah, I might get it too, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's probably more where I am, but... Yeah.
Next time, I think, I don't know if we're ready to say exactly who or what we're doing next time, but we're going to be excited for a brand new character or characters in the future.
Yeah, until then, I'm Henry Bernstein.
I'm Brandon Bernstein.
No relation.
You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Jewish Comics Pod, or you can email us at jewishcomicspodcast@gmail.com.